billionaire Peter Thiel has been holding secret lectures about the Antichrist, and he's preparing for a darker future than you could ever imagine. It involves a Palantir police state surveillance system and transhumanist dreams of immortality. He's trying to brainwash the masses into a totalitarian faith, and I'm here to expose you to the truth, so stay tuned for those leaked Antichrist lectures, Decoded, and why Greta Thunberg, Bill Gates, and AI suddenly matter to the end times that they're trying to create. Today we're going to talk about and decode those odd statements and lectures being made by billionaire Peter Thiel in regards to what he believes is the Antichrist. We'll cover the New York Times interview with Ross Douthat. I'm probably mispronouncing his last name too. Ross Douthat and the secret lecture series that he completed in October. We'll talk about hyperstition symbolism, boomers, Thiel's fear of technology stagnation, and unlocking immortality. We'll talk about the Great Reset, Greta Thunberg, Rene Girard's mimetic theory, and find out why these nerds are trying to kill us. If you like that phrase, I put it on the back of a super soft podcast t-shirt that you can still pick up at occultsymbolism.com, along with signed books and the best tasting mushroom-infused coffee on the planet, the Mushroom Minotti Watcher coffee. That's right. And so check for that in the links in the show notes, as well as links to the Dark Enlightenment series, because if you'd like this topic, boy, have I got a topic for you. It's called The Dark Enlightenment, and it's a, I think, 6 or 7 part series I did. I'll put a link in the show notes. You can start with part one and work your way through, and it's going to blow your mind. I assure you, I'm planning on writing a book about it if I get this darn Twin Peaks book completed. So be sure to check the links in the show notes for the occultsymbolism.com web store, as well as the Dark Enlightenment series. Okay, let's go. First, we have to look back to the New York Times interview that Peter Thiel did with Ross Douthat. Douthat? I don't know how you say his name. We'll call him Ross. Oh, Ricky Ross over at New York Times. Because it'll make more sense than the sparse and choppy lecture information, which we'll talk about why that is. But first, let's go through the New York Times interview with Ricky Ross and Peter Thiel. You can find the full thing on YouTube. It's about an hour long-ish. I'm gonna blast through it though, okay? It starts with a discussion about Peter Thiel's essay called The End of the Future that was written 12 years ago. And he was arguing back then how we are in this period of technological stagnation. This is the thing. This is the key to the whole ordeal about the Antichrist for him, okay? I'm gonna tell you the plot spoiler. I'm gonna tell you what this is all about. This is about a nerd who has fantasies of science fiction, and they're not coming true, and he's mad about it. Boo! You know? That's what we're dealing with. Someone gave these nerds money, and now they're ruining the whole world for us. So let me explain why I believe that. He wanted all of this great acceleration of technology to continue and on the path that Ray Kurzweil formulated in his books. If you read Ray Kurzweil, he's a futurist, the lead engineer at Google. He had this fantasy about unlocking the singularity, which, look, it could still happen. I'm growing more skeptical of AI as days go by, but it doesn't matter what I think. It's what these nerds think. It's what they're trying to do. They're trying to lock us into a digital matrix, right? And the reason is Ray Kurzweil's got daddy issues, and he wants to unlock his dead father from the dead. Who knows? That's what I'm saying. These people are weird. They're psychopaths and they're nerds and they've got all the money and now we all go along for this ride. During the interview, they talk about Back to the Future, the movie, and about how Back to the Future 2 showed you the future of 2015, you know, with the flying cars and such. And they comment about how this is, you know, wildly off. And, I mean, this captures these nerds, right? But why weren't the movies real? Ooh. Like they're obsessed with science fiction. This is what motivated and inspired the rocket scientist, you know, Jack Parsons and so on. And Back to the Future 2 actually had a lot of predictions that did work out, right? It did support that theory about the predictive programming in film, like video phone calls, which we saw in 2001 Space Odyssey as well. Flat screen TVs, augmented reality, and the flying cars apparently, and I wouldn't listen to the garbage, but Elon Musk was on Joe Rogan getting his annual glazing, and I guess Elon said that he's going to show us a prototype of a flying car by the end of the year. I'll be sure to hold my breath, like all the other projects he boasts and brags about that never happen. But most importantly, the storyline of Back to the Future 2 with Biff was in fact based on Donald Trump. Co-writer Bob Gale confirmed that in an interview with the Daily Beast, I believe it was. And if you don't know the story of Back to the Future 2, Biff was this millionaire casino owner bully. He was a bully, and he was involved with politics. And that apparently was based on Trump. So there was a little bit of, you know, I mean, I don't know how predictive that was. I mean, Trump was pretty famous in the 80s as being a casino magnate and such, right? Now, what's interesting about all this is that it fits into Peter Thiel's Dark Enlightenment stuff when we consider this concept. We talked about predictive programming, but there's a similar concept. When you get into my Dark Enlightenment series, there's an episode about the CCRU, and they were doing research in the 90s about memes becoming reality, right? This is very much tied into whole Pepe the Frog, Keck, Steve Bannon, that whole camp of madness. And they called it hyperstition in the CCRU. So in a way, the predictions of Back to the Future 2, they were trying to fuel up, or Peter Thiel wanted it to fuel up a reality, which didn't quite happen, right? Rosk asks if he's like, he wants to quantify this stagnation that Peter Thiel is so upset about. And he asks him to quantify it, and Peter goes directly to a comparison of economic factors. Like, to prove there's stagnation, he says, how are you doing versus your boomer parents when they were, you know, the same age? And I don't know. I think that's a fair take. Because, you know, the boomer generation, they had it the best. I feel like they had the best part of the American dream, it seems like. It seems like they pulled the ladder out behind them, is what it feels like. You know, I could be wrong. It just seems that way. It seems like you could get more done. But I also do, to throw the boomers a lifeline, I also do think that we got by with less back then. You know, I grew up in the 80s. I grew up in PA with no air conditioning. And, like, that's unfathomable today. You know, like, we just didn't have things. We didn't go on vacations. Like, it's just the way we live today just isn't the same. Like, I wonder if we got rid of vacations and cell phones and internet and technology, if maybe and air conditioning, like me, and every single car was a stick shift. There was manual windows and everything. There was no air conditioning in your car. I mean, it was like, it's a different world. Like, if you got rid of all that, like, I don't know, maybe you could get by better. You certainly didn't buy coffee. There was no Starbucks. You didn't buy stuff like that. I remember, like, you just wouldn't buy drinks. I mean, I don't know if that was just my experience or not. Like, we didn't go out to eat. We didn't buy drinks at gas stations and things like that. Like, it didn't happen. I mean, it happened once in a great while, but today it's like every morning I gotta go to the 7-Eleven and get a Monster and a hot dog or whatever people do. And it's like a crazy waste of money. Like, that's just not how we lived back then. Anyway, get off my old man soapbox. So Peter Thiel thinks that things started slowing down in the 70s, and he thinks that if we don't find a way back to the future, then all of society will collapse, because that's not how the capitalist system of the Western world or America has functioned, and ordinary people won't allow for stagnation. We have to have growth, and this is very much, if you watch Michael Moore's, I remember the documentary is about capitalism. It's pretty good, and it lays out the insanity of the stock market and capitalism, that there has to be continual growth. You can't just sell a good product and be like, yep, every year it's great. We make X amount of sales every year. No. It has to be continual growth. If it plateaus at $1 billion a year, like, that's terrible. It has to be $1.1 billion at all costs. Fire those workers, replace them with AI bots, you know? And that's why you get all this stuff. So Greta Thunberg is apparently the Antichrist representative of this anti-growth type of society. And Peter Thiel thinks that that will be super oppressive, right? And this goes down to like right-left paradigms. Whatever your big boogeyman is, whatever your fear is, that will inform your line of thinking. Like for Peter Thiel, he is all in on Trump and the right-wing stuff because he thinks that the left-wing stuff is really the oppressors, you know? And you could argue vice versa. Which I'm not going to do today because I, you know, have my opinions and that's okay. Greta really lives rent-free in Peter Thiel's head. Just know that. He talks about her consistently. And I don't know enough about her to, I don't really have an informed opinion on her. I would say she seems very much like a, you know, if I call Taylor Swift an industry plant, I would say she's an environmentalist plant. I mean, her story is, seems to be out of nowhere that she's like world famous, right? I don't know what her stances are to say if I agree or disagree with her. I mean, I'm pretty much an environmentalist myself, so I don't know what she stands for, though. Okay. Now, I'm going to play a clip here for you, but they talk about the idea of taking risks for growth. And Thiel says that this was early modernity and there were these pursuits of immortality back then. And he even references Francis Bacon. It doesn't really make sense. He talks about how it's sort of anti-Christian. I don't really get what he's saying here. But he talks about how in the 90s and 2000s, there was this push for cryogenic freezing of people's heads like Walt Disney, right? In the pursuit of immortality and how that's sort of gone away. Take a listen.
What is risk in the medical space look like?
Yeah, you would take a lot more risk. If you have some fatal disease, there probably are a lot more risks you can take. There are a lot more risks the researchers can take. Culturally, what I imagine it looks like is early modernity, where people, they thought we would cure diseases. They thought we would have radical life extension. Immortality was part of the project of early modernity. It was Francis Bacon, Condorcet, maybe it was anti-Christian, maybe it was downstream of Christianity, it was competitive. If Christianity promised you a physical resurrection, you know, science was not going to succeed unless it promised you the exact same thing. But I don't know. I remember 1999, 2000, when we were running PayPal, one of my co-founders, Luke Nosek, he was into Alcor and cryonics and people should freeze themselves. And we had one day where we took the whole company to a freezing party, you know, a Tupperware party. People sell Tupperware policies at a freezing party.
Was it just your heads? What was going to be frozen?
You could get a full body or just a head.
The head was cheaper.
It was disturbing when the dot matrix printer didn't quite work, and so the freezing policies couldn't be printed out. But in retrospect, this was still
technological stagnation once again, right?
But it's also a symptom of the decline because in 1999, this was not a mainstream view, but there was still a fringe boomer view, where they still believed they could live forever. And that was the last generation. So I'm always anti-boomer, but maybe there's something we've lost even in this fringe boomer narcissism where there were at least a few boomers who still, you know, believed science would cure all their diseases. No one who's a millennial believes that anymore.
I think there are some people who believe in a different kind of immortality, though, right now. I think part of the fascination with AI is connected to a specific vision of transcending limits. And I'm going to ask you about that after I ask you about politics.
He's basically saying that the scientists thought we would have unlocked this immortality by now. And that makes him sad. He says he's anti-boomer because they're narcissists and the boomers were the last to believe in immortality. Ross is like, yeah, but isn't there another belief in immortality that we can cover? And then he teases it. It comes up later. And Ross was talking to him about why he supported Donald Trump. And the point is that Trump was an agent of chaos. He describes it as risk and disruption. And Thiel wanted to shake up the stagnation with this chaos. And again, it's all about using the order and chaos opposing polarities. Very secret society-ish, right? Which makes sense because a lot of the people in Trump's team there are, you know, Ivy League, Yale type folks. So not surprising. Ross asks him what Trump did in the first term to do all that, to shake things up. And he says Trump got people to start this conversation to understand that something is wrong in our society. This basically this idea of stagnation. And now all of Silicon Valley's all in on this. Musk, Zuckerberg, Bezos, all the people we saw lined up at the inauguration, Google, they're all supporting this because they think there's something in it for them. And they talk about how Trump's populism is exposing how inefficient the government is, saying we could never do a Manhattan Project today. There could never be an Apollo today, says the guy who's secretly an informant for intelligence agencies, but you know, we'll talk about that in a bit. So, which is also kind of weird. Like, this is where I don't understand some of the stuff. Like, the right-wing folks like Thiel and others say the government's so inefficient they can't get anything done. They can't keep a secret. They're wildly inefficient and they can't seem to accomplish anything. Yet in the same breath, they're like conspiratorial minded. They're like, they're talking to aliens and they've got this technology that can, you know, I'm morphing into Alex Jones here a little bit. They're morphing into shapeshifting alien folks, and they've got surveillance that'll, you know, shoot lasers into your house. I just don't understand it. I don't know how you can say both exist, right? But Thiel told Elon about this. He said, look, if Trump doesn't win, I'm moving out of America. And then Elon told Thiel, look, there's no alternative to move to. And then later, Peter Thiel has this realization that Elon Mars's fantasy of going to Mars wasn't even a fantasy anymore because the point he was trying to say is that this woke socialist government would follow you to Mars eventually. So that explains exactly why they want to burn it all to the ground. That explains the Dark Enlightenment stuff. That explains why they need to tear the whole system to the roots, okay? And Ross asks him what exactly he thinks he's investing in with these AI investments, and he's not sure if it'll break us from stagnation, but he wishes we were going to Mars. He wishes we were curing dementia, all this stuff. Ross asks him if he believes in the super sentient AI thing, and Thiel talks about the IQ and talks about ramping up intelligence and if these things can solve all the problems, right? And Thiel looks at this as the savior. This AI, it could be the savior to break us out of the stagnation and put us on this path of immortality, right? And Ross asks if he believes that AI will lead to transhumanism. And this is where he asks if he wants the human race to endure. Seems like a softball question. Let's see how Peter Thiel handles it.
I feel it is always an implicit acknowledgement that but for AI, we are like in almost total stagnation.
But the world of AI is clearly filled with people who, at the very least, seem to have a more utopian, transformative, whatever word you want to call it, view of the technology than you're expressing here, right? And you were mentioned earlier the idea that the modern world used to promise radical life extension and doesn't anymore. It seems very clear to me that a number of people deeply involved in artificial intelligence see it as a kind of mechanism for transhumanism, for transcendence of our mortal flesh, and either some kind of creation of a successor species or some kind of merger of mind and machine. And do you think that's just all kind of irrelevant fantasy? Or do you think it's just hype? Do you think people are trying to raise money by pretending that we're going to build a machine god, right? Is it hype? Is it delusion? Is it something you worry about? You would prefer the human race to endure, right? You're hesitating.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I would
This is a long hesitation.
There's so many questions implicit.
Should
in this.
The human race survive?
Yes.
Okay.
But I also would I also would like us to radically solve these problems.
Right.
And so, you know, it's always, I don't know, you know, yeah, transhumanism is this, you know, the ideal was this radical transformation where your human natural body gets transformed into an immortal body. And there's a critique of, let's say, the trans people in a sexual context, or I don't know, a transvestite is someone who changes their clothes and cross dresses. And a transsexual is someone where you change your, I don't know, penis into a vagina. And we can then debate how well those surgeries work. But we want more transformation than that. It's the critique is not that it's weird and unnatural. It's, man, it's so pathetically little. And okay, we want more than cross-dressing or changing your sex organs. We want you to be able to change your heart and change your mind and change your whole body. And then Orthodox Christianity, by the way, the critique Orthodox Christianity has of this is these things don't go far enough. Like that transhumanism is just changing your body, but you also need to transform your soul and you need to transform your whole self. And so,
right. But the other, wait. I generally agree with your, what I think is your belief that religion should be a friend to science and ideas of scientific progress. I think any idea of divine providence has to encompass the fact that we have progressed and achieved and done things that would have been unimaginable to our ancestors. But it still also seems like, yeah, the promise of Christianity in the end is you get the perfected body and the perfected soul through God's grace. And the person who tries to do it on their own with a bunch of machines is likely to end up as a dystopian character.
Well, it's... Let's articulate this.
And you can have a heretical form of Christianity, that says something else.
I don't know. I think the word nature does not occur once in the Old Testament. And so, you know, there is a word in which, a sense in which the way I understand, the Judeo-Christian inspiration is about transcending nature. It is about overcoming things. And, you know, and the closest thing you can say to nature is that people are fallen, and that's the natural thing in a Christian sense is that you're messed up.
So Peter's not too sure about his answers here, but he does know that Greta Thunberg is totally the Antichrist, and he is totally not. He's just not sure if the human race should survive or not, okay? And he hesitates a lot, obviously. He says, eventually he's like, well, kind of, I guess. And then he strangely goes into talks about transhumanism versus transgenders, which he calls transsexuals. And he says it's not enough. And I'm like, wait a minute, what? Like, I thought you guys were so mad about, like, transgenders using bathrooms and existing and all this stuff. And now it's like, well, that's not enough. I'm like, do you guys ever get on the same page here? Like, I don't understand what's going on here. I think it's warring factions within the right at this point. And then he brings my religion into it, Orthodoxy, which I found extremely appalling, and says that Orthodox Christianity wants to take this even further with the transformation of the spirit. I'm like, I mean, I guess that's one weird way of looking at it. So then Ross talks about the idea that Christianity would say that pursuing immortality without God is sus, and the people building AI don't believe that they are doing God's work at all. And then he responds in an even more meandering, confusing response. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's amazing how these have become the world's most powerful men, okay? And he doesn't really answer the question. It seems to throw him for a loop when he says, should the human race survive? That seemed to really, like, short his circuits, which should tell you everything you need to know. And that clip went viral months ago when this interview was released. Then he's talking about Elon Musk building 1 billion robots, which is their new thing they want to do. And I don't know if you saw the video clip of that Neo robot that's supposed to help with house chores, but it's really just some dude in a... looking through goggles into your house and doing stuff. Crazy. I just don't see how this technology is ever going to get to the point that they fantasize it getting, to be honest. Which is a good thing, because you can't trust these nerds with this amount of power. Ross asks him what he thinks the Antichrist actually is, because, you know, Teal's been talking a bunch about it. And Teal responds by talking about how there's these existential risks, like the one world order totalitarian state. He mentions how nukes are a threat controlled by the UN's one world order. He talks about a film called One World or None. I haven't seen it. And he claims that Christians see it the same way, that the Antichrist is the one world order. Fair. And that Christians either see it as we either go towards that or we go towards Armageddon, the end times. Then he says it's Greta Thunberg. And it's Greta Thunberg because it's the people who warn about AI and the people that want to create peace and people that want this one world order. Like, they all get lumped together. And if you listen to my Dark Enlightenment series, we talked about how people like Peter Thiel and Elon Musk, they buy into this thing called Rocco's Basilisk. And it's this idea, this thought exercise about how if we seed an AI superintelligence god and it becomes, you know, sentient or whatever, and it says, hey, how come some of you guys didn't want to build me? How come some of you guys didn't want to birth me? And it's going to then punish them. So if you are anti-AI, you are going to be punished when AI becomes God. And vice versa, Elon Musk and the people that are fueling AI and building it, they will be rewarded by their new God. I know, it sounds crazy. Listen to my Dark Enlightenment series if you haven't heard it. Ross says that if we build up AI, Ross, the interviewer, suggest that if we build up AI, it will become a tool for totalitarianism. Which means he'll get punished when the new AI god comes. And Thiel thinks environmentalism is more likely to be the one to build this totalitarian government. And he compares it to Europe because he says they're pursuing three options: the Green Party, Sharia law, or communism. And right now the Green Party is winning. And he says the hippies won in the 70s, and that's when progress stopped. That's when stagnation happened. And that's his big boogeyman, right? And Ross says that the Antichrist would use all these AI tools and Palantir, which was co-founded by Peter Thiel, military weaponry and surveillance and all this stuff. And Thiel says that we've been stagnant because of all you hippies that want peace and safety, right? Which he cites being something that the Antichrist would say from the Bible. And to throw one bone here to Peter Thiel, in the Great Reset books written by Klaus Schwab, we covered these in late 2020 if you haven't listened to those. Klaus Schwab talks about using AI surveillance as a blockchain to monitor our energy usage and restrict it, right? That's the green agenda version. That's exactly what he's talking about with the Green Party, and he ties it in with Greta Thunberg, which I don't know, maybe. I mean, I wouldn't doubt it that she's in the same sort of camp, same vision. And the insidious part about all this is that the residential usage of energy and all these resources isn't quite as much as the corporations. And they're constantly talking about restricting personal residential uses of everything. In Utah, we do it with water. In Utah, they're like, oh, don't water your lawn. Meanwhile, like 80% of the water goes to alfalfa farms that sell it to China. Okay, how about you tell them to back off a little bit and I can protect my investment of my yard, you know? But that's how these people want to do. They want to clamp down on people and give handouts to the corporations, right? Corporate welfare. So Thiel and Trump's version would be the Palantir surveillance police state, which is exactly what we talked about in the 1984 book club. We talked about, and because this is exactly what George L. Orwell was warning us about and why he wrote the book. He was saying that totalitarianism can come from the left or the right. Either way, it's still totalitarianism, and neither is good. So that's the gist of the New York Times interview, where he kind of talked about the Antichrist, which obviously to me seems like a question he wanted the New York Times to ask him, like he planted that. Because then later, from September through October, he would do a full lecture series on the Antichrist, which is what we're going to talk about now. He did a 4-part lecture series in San Francisco, and it was apparently like $200 for tickets, sold out. It was off the record, so no note taking, no recording, no phones, no nothing. But a couple websites claim to have gotten secret recordings of the lecture, one being reason.com, which I don't recommend that website because their article sucked. They said they had 7 hours of content, and it was like the shortest uninformative take I've ever seen. So if you dig deeper, you can find The Guardian did a much better article on it. They claim they also got access to the lectures. Whatever, right? So Thiel does these lectures with this nonprofit called Acts 17 Collective, which stands for Acknowledging Christ in Technology and Society. It's this fusion of tech, Christianity. And Peter Thiel describes the Antichrist in these lectures. I'm going to summate what the Guardian article says about these lectures. Obviously, I don't have access to the lectures. But Thiel describes the Antichrist as a system that will rise in America, and he's scared of this. He said this, a basic definition of the Antichrist, some people think of it as a type of very bad person. Sometimes it's used more generally as a spiritual descriptor of the forces of evil. What I will focus on is the most common and most dramatic interpretation of Antichrist, an evil king or tyrant or anti-messiah who appears in the end times. Then he apparently identifies himself as a small O Orthodox Christian, which makes me look back to the New York Times thing and say, oh, maybe he wasn't talking about Orthodox Christianity. He was talking about small O. All right. But he calls himself a humble classical liberal. I was like, I don't know about that. Because he's kind of more libertarian than anything. When Thiel was at Stanford, he studied under a French philosopher named René Girard. And this René Girard was, not to be confused with René Guénon, but Girard was famous for this thing called the mimetic theory, which is about how humans desire things so that they can imitate one another. And he wants, he said, Girard's theory says that we want objects simply because society wants objects, not because we actually personally want these things, which kind of makes sense because that's why advertising and marketing works. That's what Edward Bernays' principles are built upon and so on. Well, to understand this further, I found there's a guy named Zach Slayback who wrote up a piece on a Substack in May 2025 about Girard's mimetic theory and the Antichrist. Strangely enough, which we're like, wow, that's really close to what we're talking about. Yeah. Because Zach is a partner at the 1517 Fund, which was funded through Peter Thiel's fellowship. Gee, do you think Thiel may have seen or used this or had Zach prepare this lecture for him? Could be. But the article talks about mimetic theory to discuss how desiring objects leads to conflict and chaos. So for peace to come about, society will every so often use a scapegoat to blame for this chaos and this conflict for a return to peace and then punish the scapegoat, right? From this, religion has been brought about when they deify a scapegoat who died for everyone's sins. And this was the way it worked until Christ came along because Christ died and he was revealed to be the victim who was God. So societies can't scapegoat into peace and chaos, and societal chaos and conflict has no way of relieving the pressure through the scapegoat because of this. It's confusing to me too. But the point is that societies will, you know, sacrifice the scapegoat for the sins, the atonement of the sins of the community. Christ came along and changed that. All right. So Girard says that we're supposed to now, instead of having a scapegoat, a sacrifice for the community, we're supposed to imitate Christ instead of imitating others' desires, all right? Which I think is a fair take, I guess. And this teaching of Christ was spread with the Christian faith, and now since then we've got these societies that care for victims, we've got hospitals and charities, and we show mercy and justice and all these things. However, Girard believes that today's society has become a radicalized version of Christ, and we're now obsessed with protecting victims and fighting injustices. I think this is the social justice warrior of the left sort of archetype, right? To the point that we forgot forgiveness and humility, and we've somehow returned to the scapegoat theory, but now the scapegoat is the oppressors, right? And this is what the Antichrist is, a fake Christ who shows compassion but doesn't believe in forgiveness or actual peace. And he says this is done with people that conduct wars to protect victims. He brings the Abrasions into this, which he said, look, they do these Abrasions and they frame it as saving the mother and political grandstanding of who really saves the most oppressed people. This is what he says. So ultra-Christianity is a social order that values concern for the victim and still has the threat of mimetic contagion, but is now left without either the pre-archaic religions and rites of sacrifice to prevent destruction or Christian conversion to prevent destruction. Instead, you get cycles of mimetic violence driven by a desire to save the victim, but without the call to conversion and forgiveness. Rivalry erupts out of a desire to save the victim. Now, back to the topic at hand. But you have to know this because Girard is what informs a lot of Peter Thiel's thoughts. All right. And if that sounds kind of right wingy, it's because it is. It becomes a point of saying, like, well, God, maybe the people that are trying to give food to the hungry, maybe they're the Antichrist. Maybe they're wrong for doing that. Is what that seed plants. So with technology, AI, social media, everyone is imitating each other. Now we have this rapid mimetic violence, and everyone's outraged all the time. We're mimicking everyone's anger. True. These are all true things. And they're saying that Christ came and got rid of the scapegoat sacrifices and promoted compassion, which was good, but society took it too far. And now we forgot that we're also supposed to forgive. We're also supposed to not be violent. We're supposed to turn the other cheek, right? And, you know, now we're causing violence, trying to protect victims through social movements and politics, the leftist movement. And this is what the Antichrist is, the left. Preaching the peace, love, and compassion, but using violence to achieve it. Which is interesting because it calls into question the U.S. military, right? Like, that's what we, you know, I was in the military, but, like, that's what they do. Is like peace through war and dominance. Which I don't know that he's wrong. I really don't. It's the same way that I don't believe in the death penalty because, like, you're not supposed to do that. Do I understand why people want the death penalty? Yes, I do. People do heinous stuff, but, like, that's not the idea of Christianity. So something curious here, scapegoats is also a term used in James Shelby Downer's King Kill 33, which we also did a three-part series on. I advise you to listen to that as well. Back in June, I think, July, where they talk about how society would murder someone for the sins of the group, and that was JFK. And now, you know, now we're hearing more talk about societal scapegoats and stuff. But they think that victims in this whole forgiveness cycle must convert to Christianity. And if you're not baptized Christian, you know, you don't make it in. And they think that the mimetic desire is the only reason we try to protect victims. Because we're trying to outdo each other. We're trying to imitate one another and be like, well, I donate more than you or whatever, right? I don't know that I disagree with some of those points. I think some of those are pretty interesting and seem relevant, right? So back to Peter Thiel. He says in these lectures that the Antichrist is actually a Luddite who wants to stop all science and technology, which this is very much echoes what we talked about with the New York Times interview. He says it's people like Eliezer Yudkowsky, Nick Bostrom, and Greta Thunberg who argue for world government to stop science. And this is the closest we get to actual names of who the Antichrist could be, according to Peter Thiel. He also talks a lot of trash about Bill Gates being an awful person, but dismisses that he could ever be popular enough to be the Antichrist. You know, nerd wars here. But he mentions these people because, you know, Yudkowsky is an AI computer scientist. Nick Bostrom is a philosopher about technology. And Greta is an environmentalist. And they're all critical of AI as an existential risk. So he's like, we got to get rid of these people because we need to bring in the AI at all costs. Because it comes at a cost, which we'll talk about here in the exciting conclusion, I believe. He then talks about numerology of the age of the Antichrist being 66 instead of 33, which raises concerns about the Kabbalistic Klepoth to me. He said, Christ only lived to age 33 and became history's greatest man. The Antichrist has to somehow outdo this. I don't want to be way too literal on the 33 number. I'd rather stress the Antichrist will be a youthful conqueror. Maybe in our gerontocracy, 66 is the new 33. But something like these numbers do occur almost mystically through a number of different contexts. Buddha begins his travels at age 30 and experiences nirvana, ego death, 33. But I had to be ecumenical and say something nice about Islam. One idea that's pretty cool is when you're reborn into the afterlife, you're born into your 33-year-old self. The 33-year-old self is your best self. Livy's, the Roman historian's 33rd chapter of the 33rd book, it announces this 33-year-old conqueror. It's like Alexander at the peak of his power, or even in Tolkien. The Hobbits have a coming of age ceremony at 33. Because, you know, Teal's obsessed with Lord of the Rings, right? That's where Palantir comes from, and so on. That's how Frodo is when he inherits, that's how old Frodo is when he inherits the ring. So again, this idea that Peter Thiel is so obsessed with science fiction and fantasy, and you know, he's a conspiracy theorist in a way, right? He thinks this stuff needs to manifest into reality. Thiel says there's going to be a one-world government, he calls it Leviathan, that will use supreme power to force people into peaceful cooperation. He talks about Bibi Netanyahu being unjustly attacked by the UN, because the UN is part of this Antichrist system. Again, I don't know if I disagree with that. I've seen stuff about the UN that you could probably do a whole show about that, I guess. Anyway, he says, as the Antichrist is synonymous with a one-world order state for Thiel, this is The Guardian. He also believes that international bodies, including the UN and the International Criminal Court, hasten the coming of Armageddon. Throughout his lectures, he warns of what he sees as the danger of these bodies and the harms they have already caused. In the following quotes, he's lamenting the actions of the ICC. They've started arresting more and more people. Rodrigo Duterte, the former president of the Philippines, was arrested this year. They had arrest warrants out for Netanyahu and Gallant. When I met Netanyahu early in 24, about a year and a half ago, we talked about what he's doing in Gaza, and the one-liner he had was, I can't just Dresdenize Gaza, you can't just firebomb them. So it's like, come on, I'm less of a war criminal than Winston Churchill. Why am I in so much trouble? Why is Peter Thiel talking about this? It's because he's plugged in, okay? Epstein's biggest investment is in Peter Thiel's Valor Ventures. Peter Thiel is very much into the blue and whites. Earlier this year, he went there for a wedding of one of his venture capitalist buddies, Zach Frankel, along with executives from BlackRock and Netanyahu himself. That was covered in the news. And he, it makes sense because he then in the Antichrist lectures praises the CIA for going rogue because the State Department was full of communists in the 60s. And he said this because, you know, Thiel is plugged in. He was an informant for the FBI. He was buddies with Epstein. So, of course, he's defending the intelligence agencies because that's what all that is related to. And ironically, someone also asked about the assassination of Charlie Kirk, and Thiel's response was that it was way above his pay grade. He didn't want to talk about it because he probably knows there's something going on there, because there for sure is. You can't convince me out of that. You ever see the theories about the microphone being the like the exploding pagers? I believe that one right now. And you know where the exploding pagers came from, right? He later talks about how fighting communism was good for holding back the Antichrist because he associates the two together. Because again, he's trying to demonize any kind of leftist thought. And Thiel is cozy with intelligence through a guy named Charles Johnson, who's another one of these far-right figures. He co-founded Clearview AI, which was in the news because they have facial recognition software that they give to the police state, as well as Enrico Tarrio from the Proud Boys, from the Jan 6 stuff. He was also an informant. The whole MAGA crew is shady, right? It's all plugged into intelligence operations, I believe. Thiel, you know, they even proved that there was FBI folks at the Jan 6 thing, right? Thiel thinks, and look, I'm not, that's not a commentary on the politics thing. I don't know what the angle is, but I think that they're all very closely associated for some reason. Thiel thinks paying taxes is part of the Book of Revelation, when the Book of Revelation talks about needing to engage in commerce with the mark of the beast. I'll rebuttal to that, where Christ says, you know, render unto Caesar what Caesar's, right? You know, I don't know it's anti-Christian to pay taxes. I mean, look, nobody likes paying taxes. I'm not like pro, like, yay. I mean, trust me, we're dual income, no kids. I pay a lot of taxes. I'm just saying, like, it's, there's people that say, like, oh, taxation is theft. And it's like, well, I guess, but like, don't you want roads and traffic lights and some kind of organization around society? So it's not just like, anyway. So Thiel is worried about, I'm trying to stay off the soapbox today. I got a lot to get through. Thiel is worried about another Caesar type government. And he's saying he's even worried that J.D. Vance, who's his little puppy, is too close to the Pope. Didn't J.D. Vance kill the last Pope? Remember, he shook his hand, then he died. And he says he's worried about a woke American Pope being, you know, what's his name, Pope Leo, the new one, or even AOC becoming the woke American president to bring the end times. And he kind of wraps it up with this idea that, like, look, to fight the Antichrist, we have to use free will, which is very libertarian of him, and I also agree with him on this one and only point, okay? So in conclusion, what was all this about? First off, I want to clarify, orthodoxy, we don't put a lot of weight into the Book of Revelation. If you sign up for the daily readings, they send you Bible verses every day on email. They do not cover the Book of Revelation, ever. They go through the whole Bible. Because of this exact reason, is because it can be misinterpreted to spin whatever someone wants it to say, because it's full of like esoteric symbolism stuff. And people like Peter Thiel fall for this, right? And it's hilarious that Thiel is spinning out over all these ideas. What he's doing is he's using it to support his beliefs by using Christianity, which to me is like, that gets you the first class ticket to the basement. You know what I'm saying? Like the thing about not paying taxes, he's trying to sort of cherry pick, and he's a terrible conspiracy theorist. But that's what he's doing. And he thinks the Antichrist is someone who is going to cultivate a fear of environmental problems, climate change, World War III, AI, nuclear war, so that they can gain power. And he believes that America is the great opposer of what they call the Catacomb. The Catacomb is the opposer of the Antichrist, because America is very anti-one world order, because we're very sovereign, which is good. I actually agree with that. His big fear is this stagnation, the slowdown of the technological progress that he wants so badly. And why? Why does he want that? You have to know where these people want to take us. They want to put us in the digital matrix. They want to go according to Ray Kurzweil's singularity timeline, and they got to move it faster. And take note that Peter Thiel is besties with Trump and Vance and Elon Musk. He founded Palantir and PayPal and funded Facebook and SpaceX and OpenAI and ChatGPT, all these things that are awful. I mean, he's got an agenda. And what's odd is that Thiel's professed love of Francis Bacon and the New Atlantis, which he brings up multiple times in the New York Times interview, as well as in the second lecture of the Antichrist. The article didn't specify what he said, but Francis Bacon was the one pushing for this New Atlantis, of this scientific sort of false technocracy that is supposed to fix everything and make this utopia. And what I think is really going on here is that Peter Thiel is planting the seeds to make Christians buy into this AI God thing, as well as pump more fear into any kind of leftist or environmental causes, Because AI is very much anti-environmental. It pumps out tons of emissions. It wrecks the air. It consumes all the water. It requires just a ton of electricity to the point that these nerds are building nuclear power plants just for AI. And he's playing chess here. He's planting seeds that all of this is necessary. And if you're against all of this stuff, you're not only not a real Christian, but you are the Antichrist. So there you go. Thanks for listening to the show. If you like the show, you can leave a 5-star review on whatever app, Spotify and Apple, preferably. Someone went logged into Spotify just to give a 5-star review. So shout out. Sorry, I forgot your name. I field a lot of comments. So leave a 5-star. That helps me with all the 1-star haters. And if you love the show, sign up for the hundreds of bonus episodes ad-free, patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher. Links are always in the show notes. Also, don't hesitate to get a, this isn't the shirt you'll get if you're watching the video version of this, but you can get the Super Soft Podcast logo t-shirts that say, "These nerds are going to kill us" on the back, because guess what? That's what they're trying to do. You can get that mushroom-infused coffee while I still got supplies in stock, and signed paperbacks at occultsymbolism.com. Like and subscribe. Thanks for listening. Till next time, stay positive.